This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
On June 4th, 1781, Governor Thomas Jefferson fled Monticello mere minutes ahead of the British soldiers who were rushing up the mountain to capture him. He nearly became the most valuable American prisoner of the Revolutionary War. His life and the momentum of the entire war balanced on a razor's edge. The new book, which tells this dramatic story, is Flight from Monticello, Thomas Jefferson at War. It's an honor to welcome to the program author Michael Cranish. He's a reporter in the Washington Bureau of the Boston Globe. And he is a former fellow at the International Center for Jefferson Studies at Monticello. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell me first, this is such an unbelievable story. And of course, I was familiar with it. A lot of folks in Charlottesville have sort of heard the Cliff Notes version of this story. But this truly was, you point out in your book how this could have changed everything. I mean, this was just one of those great what-ifs in American history. What if he had really been captured?
Right. Well, the British were coming, literally. We've heard about the British coming in Massachusetts, but this story is what happened to Jefferson as the British were coming. So I was very interested. I heard the same tale that you did, that Jefferson was at Monticello just minutes ahead of the force that was led by Bannister Tarleton. And it made me wonder, how did Jefferson get himself in this position? This is almost 5 years after he authored the Declaration of Independence. And my sense is that a lot of people think when July 4th, 1776 occurred, that was it, that the war was won. But here we have, almost 5 years later, Jefferson on the run. And really, the war was hardly won. The war was hardly over. You had British roaming across Virginia. Not just Jefferson, but the entire legislature was on the run. A lot of militia people couldn't serve. They were concerned about their farms, their families. So I thought this would be an interesting topic to write about for a book, and particularly so when I learned what started the invasion, and that is around January 1st of 1781, Benedict Arnold, the traitor, led a fleet of 27 ships carrying 1,600 men from New York to Virginia, and he invaded Virginia, went all the way to Richmond. So I thought this would be a dramatic story to tell, basically Benedict Arnold versus Thomas Jefferson. What a compelling tale. And also it tells us a key point of the war. It tells us about our history and how it shaped Jefferson.
Yeah. We're talking with Michael Cranish, and he will be here discussing this new book at the Virginia Film Festival. He'll be here on March 18th up at Monticello at the library there at 4 o'clock on March 18th. And you can get this book now. Check it out online, michaelcranish.com. That's K-R-A-N-I-S-H, michaelcranish.com. The book is Flight from Monticello. Michael, was he just a horrible governor? I mean, what was the problem? Because I know this scene and his years as governor really dogged him for the rest of his political career. When he ran for president, people said, oh, no, not him. He was the guy that was that governor in Virginia. He was awful.
Right. And a lot of people think of him as the author of the Declaration of Independence. But at the time, he was governor of the most important, powerful state in the United States, so he was a very important figure in that right. And at the time, a lot of people didn't even realize that he played the role in authoring the Declaration, so this is what he was known for. And he said that he really didn't want to be governor, and then when there were invasions, he bluntly admitted that he was not prepared by his life for military training. He said he wasn't prepared to lead an army on the battlefield. He was not like a George Washington, for example. But he was the governor when this happened, and when the invasion did initially happen, he was told, there was a messenger that sent a message from near Norfolk saying that there was this fleet of 27 ships. And Jefferson here did make a crucial mistake, I think most historians would agree. He received the message, and he was reluctant to call out militia because there had been so many false alarms, so he said, let's get some more intelligence. Let's find out if this is a French Allied fleet, or maybe he thought it would be, quote, a foraging party, unquote. Now, remember, this is 27 ships. But so it's unlikely it would have been a foraging party, but that's what he told someone that he sent out for more intelligence. And he waited several days. It gives you a sense, not so much that he was tentative, but how concerned he was about calling out the militia. He was concerned about having a standing army. He thought that might lead to tyranny. So he did rely on militia, but it was very difficult to call them out again and again on a three-month terms. So it took several days and another message before he finally learned that this was indeed a British fleet and that it had passed some scattered corps of militia and had made its way near Richmond. One of the things that I found in doing this research, I really wanted to go back, and in my day job, I'm an investigative reporter, and I do a lot of things where I try to start from scratch on a story. In other words, not assume what I've read is the full story, but sort of go back to the beginning. And I was able to go back and try to find out, well, who was on these ships that Arnold was leaving? There were 27 ships. So I created a list of all the ships and the officers on the ships whose names I could find, and then cross-referenced them with known journals by these same officers. And I found several journals that I think fill in some gaps in our understanding of the invasion that we previously haven't seen. So I was able to, for example, tell about the first couple of days of the invasion that pretty much were a blank slate. There's one officer, for example, who writes about taking prominent Virginians out of their beds to the cries and lamentations of their spouses, and going down streets near the coast of Virginia, and whatever they found a Virginian whom they were concerned might report them, taking them captive. And a lot of interplay between Arnold and another British commanding officer as they were fighting over plunder, how to split up the plunder. So I think I've been able to get a sense of what was happening in those early days that previously Jefferson just thought, well, nothing was happening, the militia wasn't out. In fact, we do know from these journals that there were scattered militia corps coming out trying to defeat these massive British ships with their cannons, really poorly equipped. Some had muskets, some had hatchets. They were obviously no match for the British fleet, but there was a point near Williamsburg where there was a group of militia that was able to basically stop the Arnold fleet from landing, and Arnold basically decided to continue on upward towards Westover, which a lot of people in Virginia are familiar with, and then eventually making it to Richmond. So I try to give a hour-by-hour scene almost of what happened in this invasion, and in particular, there's a place called Hood's Point, about 25 miles from Richmond, where there was supposed to be a fort that Jefferson had wanted built. It was only a shell, and he easily got past that, and that was the point at which a messenger went to Richmond and told Jefferson, indeed, the British are coming, you need to get out of here.
We're talking with best-selling author and journalist Michael Cranish. The new book is Flight from Monticello, Thomas Jefferson at War. And Michael will be here at the Virginia Film Festival on March 18th at 4 p.m. up at Monticello. Get complete details at the Virginia Film Festival website. You can also check him out online at michaelcranish.com. So, Michael, Jefferson, the General Assembly, all the legislators pick up from Richmond and they flee to Charlottesville, which they believed at the time was going to be safe, and then Richmond is sacked, right?
Well, when Arnold did come to Richmond, there was a lot of burning, a lot of things happened. One journal that I found, for example, by a Hessian officer, says that while Arnold had said, no, there was some modest burning and so forth, the Hessian officer says an awful lot more buildings were plundered, that holy places were sacked. Gives a much more vivid description, I think, of what actually happened in Richmond at that time. And you're exactly right. The legislators fled Richmond. Jefferson, in fact, and to his credit, I don't consider Jefferson a coward in his actions like some people have said. He clearly was ineffectual as a military leader, as he himself acknowledged, but he did spend several days running around Richmond trying to get arms and papers stored safely. He took his wife and young children up James River to a mansion called Tuckahoe and then further on to a place called Fine Creek, and he may have saved their lives. This was something that, if we think of Jefferson just as this sort of quiet, shy man authoring the Declaration, doesn't give you the right sense. In fact, he was a great horseman and rode around Richmond, he said, for several days, unassisted by a single military aide. So it's a different picture of Jefferson, sort of an exciting one. He stayed in Richmond. He tried to get the legislature to return. Legislators did not do so, not enough of them to make a quorum, and they did then go to Charlottesville, which Jefferson had thought would be secure, but he was mistaken. The British easily penetrated all the way to Charlottesville, and then a smaller force was sent to Monticello to try to find Jefferson himself.
We're talking with author Michael Cranish. The book is Flight from Monticello. So Jefferson's at Monticello. He knows that the British have invaded Richmond. This is June of 1781. And then here comes the guy from Cuckoo Tavern to let the legislators know that indeed the Dragoons, the British, are coming up the three-notched road and they're coming to Charlottesville. They're coming to get you.
Right. I think anybody who lives in Charlottesville has probably seen the statue or heard the story of Jack Jouett making the ride from Cuckoo Tavern up to Monticello. And I've tried to give a little bit more detail on that. And Jewett comes and warns him, and Jefferson sends his family away. But Jefferson doesn't leave at that point. It takes another Virginian to come to Monticello and say, no, you really, really have to leave. And then Jefferson goes up to a slightly higher hill and looks out with his spyglass and eventually does see that the British are coming. And finally, he does take flight just moments before the British arrive. And I think that if Jack Jouett had had a poet like Paul Revere had Longfellow, that a lot of Americans would be much more familiar with this tale. And I know if you talk to people in Virginia, they feel that that ride should be as well known as the ride of Paul Revere.
Absolutely, yes. Really, so did. Why is it that, I've never understood why is it that morning, having been told the British are coming, Governor Jefferson, that he decided to have a leisurely breakfast and hang out for a while?
Well, it's said that he had a leisurely breakfast. Here's my take on that. He believed that he had time. He knew the roads around Monticello better than anyone. He knew that if he could go a certain path through the woods that he could probably shake a troop, and he thought he could see the approaching troop in the distance. So he did send his wife and children away, and he does write at one point that he was concerned about a lot of papers that he had at Monticello. Remember that his home just down the hill at Shadwell had burned some years earlier, and he lost most of his personal effects and books. So I can see that Jefferson might have thought that he wanted to gather up whatever he could, because he really did have a real concern that Monticello would be destroyed by fire or whatever. So he writes at one point that as I took flight, and he uses the word flight himself, that he stuffed in papers where I could. So I take my cue from Jefferson himself. He said he took flight, and so the title of the book is Flight from Monticello, because that's the way he described it. Now, it's a little bit of a provocative title. Some people might think, well, why did he flee? But I thought it was best to address the central question that's dogged him for years head on by using that title, and then the subtitle is sort of counterintuitive, Thomas Jefferson at War, because we often think of him not being at war. He certainly wasn't a battlefield leader, but clearly if you read what I wrote, you'll see that he certainly was at war. He increasingly, as the invasion went on, day by day writes these letters where he really is telling people what to do out in the field, even if he's not leading the charge himself.
Michael Cranish is the author. The new book is Flight from Monticello, Thomas Jefferson at War, and we'll be giving away a free copy here in just a few minutes. So when he fled Monticello, June 4th, 1781, where did he go, and what did the British do here in Charlottesville when they couldn't find him?
Well, the small group that went to Monticello could not find him. They went down to his basement. They found some wine. They apparently consumed some of the wine. And they may have said a toast to King George, because it was the monarch's birthday. And Jefferson takes this extraordinary flight down to a friend of his house. This is a house owned by a friend of his named Rose, and he leaves his family down at this estate. And I describe in the book exactly how he crosses rivers, particularly valleys he's go through. And when I was researching this book in Charlottesville, I spent a lot of time with maps and with experts trying my best to retrace the exact route. So I went through Jefferson's memorandum book, and I think I've compiled, you know, the best possible explanation of exactly where he went. Eventually, he went down to Poplar Forest, which was his plantation, not the house we know today, just basically an overseer's cabin. But that's where he eventually ended up. But he made a trip down to his friend's house named Rose. He came back to Monticello while his family was still there, surveyed what happened, saw another plantation of his was up in flames, went back down to the Rose house, and eventually down back to Poplar Forest. So I try, again, to give you, I think, the most detailed description that's been done of the exact circumstances of this event, minute by minute or hour by hour, as best I can as it happened.
And what did the British do in Charlottesville? Did they ever capture anybody? I mean, locally?
Well, they did. Yeah, exactly. They did capture several legislators carried along. They thought, you know, this couldn't be a real threat. Most of them made it over the mountains to Stanton, where they held a session of the legislature there. But a number of the legislators who stayed behind were captured. Even Daniel Boone, if you can believe it, was there. It's just all these names of history come up. He eventually talked himself into being released. But so several people were there. They took a lot of arms that were stored in Charlottesville. They didn't stay too long in Charlottesville, however. They were concerned that the river nearby was rising, that they would be trapped. And so after a day or so, they ended up leaving Charlottesville and heading elsewhere, because their main mission was to find arms that the British were concerned were being sent south to south of North Carolina. So they headed out after a couple of days, done the destruction in Charlottesville. They didn't find Jefferson. And then they headed to other places where they thought arms were stored. So that was their central mission, and they eventually went elsewhere in Virginia.
The new book is Flight from Monticello. We're talking with author, award-winning author, and best-selling author Michael Cranish. So, Michael, before we let you go, I know you've had plenty of time to think about this. This what if? What if he had been taken captive? I mean, there were some people who signed the Declaration of Independence who were captured, who were hauled off to England and tortured in prisons. I mean, could that have been his fate?
Well, we'll never know, but certainly it's possible. Tarleton had previously found an American officer, and he had taken him as prisoner. So you have to think that they would have taken him prisoner. Maybe they would have taken him to the Tower of London in London. No way to know for sure. But again, he was the governor of the most important and powerful state. So they would have seen him as a very important figure to capture. They did not know that a couple of days before their raid on Monticello that he'd actually vacated the governorship. To them, he was as powerful a figure as they could capture. They were not successful in doing so. And ironically, I don't know if there's any plan in this, but the Virginians did sort of force the British to go all over Virginia chasing them. You know, there was no major, huge battlefield confrontation. It was a lot of smaller skirmishes. The British were spread sort of thin, and they eventually regrouped at a place called Yorktown, and we all know what happened there.
Yeah.
So in the end, that was not a good strategy on the British part to spread themselves thin and then regather in one place.
We're talking with author Michael Cranish. Linda's on the line in Albemarle County. Linda, you're on with Michael. You go right ahead.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story. And if Jewett had had the Longfellow, we wouldn't be talking about Paul Revere, because what he did was so much more important. And Paul Revere rode 3 miles. Jewett rode 40 miles through briars and brambles. And it's really an amazing story. There was a group of people in about 1992 who tried to put together an outdoor summer theater to tell that story 6 nights a week to visitors in the area. And those of us who were involved in it really feel that we would have been able to share the story of this true American hero with the whole rest of the world in that way. And I think it's a wonderful story, and I'm really glad you wrote a book on it. And I'm sure you're aware of Gail Haley's children's book. But the drawings in Gail Haley's book about Jack Jewett are just wonderful, wonderful. She was living here at the time, and I was inspired to put this book together about this hero. And he was somebody special. And you know what? He was just an ordinary guy. As a matter of fact, he was kind of a wild man, and he did a lot of gambling and womanizing. But you know, when it came time to do the right thing, he did the right thing.
Linda, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. That's Linda in Albemarle County. Michael.
Well, I agree. This is a story, and I'm not saying that I'm a Longfellow, but I hope I can bring attention to what Jack Jewett did, others Virginians did. And some people, you know, ask me, because I'm a reporter from the Boston Globe, so they see it as that another New England person coming down and writing the story. And a lot of people in Virginia told me, you know, New Englanders wrote a lot of the history of the Revolutionary War and didn't give Virginia its due. And I really hope that I've been able to do that, make amends a little bit if that's necessary, to try to come down, and I'm in the Washington office, so I'm pretty close to Virginia and spent a lot of my childhood years going around the same area. So if you talk to people in Virginia, they'll say, well, this battle was our Battle of Bunker Hill, and so forth. They'll make comparisons. But really, in their own right, I mean, you have to remember that Virginians played such a key role, of course, in the Revolution. They were motivated by these things that happened. So I write about the events that were happening in Virginia at that time and what motivated Jefferson, Washington, others, to be part of this revolution, because it wasn't predetermined. A lot of the British thought, well, Virginia will fall in line, and they need this trade on tobacco, so they won't follow Massachusetts. But in fact, Virginia did. So I try to tell part of that story.
It's a fantastic story, so well told. Michael Cranish, best-selling author. He's online at michaelcranish.com. That's K-R-A-N-I-S-H. The new book is Flight from Monticello, Thomas Jefferson at War. And Michael will be here for the Virginia Book Festival on March 18th at 4 p.m. Mark your calendars now, 4 o'clock on March 18th at the library at Monticello. Michael, thanks so much for being with us. It's a terrific job. Well done.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.